Welcome back to Lennial Writes. In this episode, we're diving into UX research best practices. Some core areas that we'll cover are planning and preparation, conducting research, analysis and synthesis, and reporting and communication. Whether you're just starting out or a seasoned UX professional, UX Research Lab is here to help you sharpen your skills. Today, I will explore key strategies and best practices to make you a more efficient and impactful UX researcher. Ready to dive in? Buckle up. Let's explore the world of UX research. I want to take a moment to express my gratitude to the research team at Expedia. When I first stepped into UX research in 2017, I had little knowledge of how research was actually conducted in this space. My background is in community psychology, and while it's comfortable writing academic papers, UX research was an entirely different world. One of the first and most valuable lessons I learned was the importance of developing a solid, well-structured research plan. A research plan is the foundation of every successful UX study. It's our guiding framework. Without it, we're navigating blindly. You've probably heard the phrase, just wing it, right? Well, UX researchers can't afford to do that. We need structure, organization, and precision. Today, I'm going to break down how to create an ironclad research plan that sets your study up for success. One of the most overlooked steps in a research plan is the background. Have you ever joined a project and struggled to understand how it came to be? That's why due diligence is key. Your background section should capture the project's origins. What led to the study in the first place? Include analytics if they're available. Gather past research reports or any related documents that add context. Your goal is to ensure that anyone who picks up your research plan can immediately grasp the purpose of your study just by reading the background section. And what if you find there is no prior research to reference? Do some homework. Look into white papers, industry reports, news articles, or academic research. There is almost always some form of supporting data that can provide context. Once you've set the stage with background information, you need to establish research goals. These should be specific, measurable, achievable, and relevant. This is your why. Why are you conducting the study and what do you hope to learn? Keep it concise. Your research goals don't need to be paragraphs long, just one or two sentences that clearly outline what you're investigating and how the findings will be used. It's also helpful to include both short-term and long-term goals. Your research questions are the test questions that will drive your study. These should be specific, clear, and focused. Avoid closed-ended questions. Opt for open-ended ones that allow for deeper insights. And always, always follow up with the why. Over the years, I've given a lot of feedback on test plans, and one of the biggest pitfalls I see is vague research questions. If your questions lack depth and focus, your study won't succeed. Some researchers like to include overarching research questions. And while those can be useful for summarizing key themes, your actual research plan needs detailed and specific questions. Don't just generalize. Write them all out. So where do these research questions come from? They stem from assumptions and hypotheses. In my first episode, I talked about how UX researchers align with the scientific method. We generate assumptions, and from there, we extract research questions. This step ensures that our study is rooted in logical inquiry rather than vague curiosity. Once you have your background, research goals, and research questions, it's time to select your research methodology. This is crucial. How can you conduct a study without a structured approach? Before finalizing your research questions, you should already have an idea of which methodology you'll use. If you're struggling to decide, take a step back and examine the problem you're trying to solve. A strong researcher will weigh multiple methodologies, considering the pros and cons of each, rather than making an arbitrary decision. If you're unsure, bring in your key stakeholders. collaborating with them can help you make an informed choice. Here's a personal example. I once faced a situation where I had three different methodologies I could use for a study. After discussing the study's objectives with my team, it became clear which methodology would best align with our goals. Now let's talk about measuring success. Your research plan should clearly define how you'll assess the study's outcome. Some common UX success metrics include comprehension, do users understand this? Discoverability, can users find this easily? Usability, is it easy to use? Utility and usefulness, does it meet user needs? And helpfulness, does it provide value? Other standardized metrics like the system usability scale or ease of use ratings can also be included, depending on your study. A well-defined participant criteria section is essential. Be very specific about your target audience. Your screening questions should be mostly open-ended with multiple choice answers where necessary. If you must use closed-ended questions, always follow up with a why. A quick tip on participant rejection. Disqualify them early in the process rather than at the end. There's nothing more frustrating than answering 14 questions only to be disqualified at question 15. Streamline your screening process to filter out unqualified participants sooner. I like to include a stakeholder review table in my research plans. This simple table lists key stakeholders and the dates they've reviewed the study plan. Here's a best practice. Schedule a live review session with your stakeholders. Don't just send an email and hope they'll read it. Getting on a call with them ensures they feel heard and allows for immediate feedback. The final piece of your research plan is your discussion guide or task list. This is your script. Without it, how will you run your study? If you're conducting user interviews, write out your questions in advance. Anticipate where users might take the conversation. If you're running task-based tests, document your exact script, expected follow-up questions, and anticipated results. As researchers, we don't wing it, we prepare. The more detailed your guide, the more seamless your study execution will be. As a final thought in this section, a well-crafted research plan is your roadmap to a successful study. It ensures clarity, structure, and alignment with your stakeholders. If you'd like to see a research plan template, feel free to email me. I'd be happy to share one. Okay, you've got your test plan, your stakeholders have signed off on it, and you're ready to kick off recruiting and get the study underway. But wait, you forgot one crucial step that scientists know: running a pilot test to identify and fix any issues before the main study. I like to run two pilots, not simultaneously, but one after the other. I want to see what adjustments I need to make from the first pilot, and once I've made those adjustments, I'll run another pilot to see if they address the issues. Now that you've run your pilot tests or tests and resolved any issues, you're ready for the main study. Recruiting participants takes time, especially if you don't have access to testing panels. Give yourself about 2 weeks to get sessions scheduled. Also, don't forget to include gratuity for your participants' generous time. When conducting user interviews, maintain neutrality and avoid leading questions. Let participants express their honest opinions without influence. This is why it's crucial to have your interview questions written down in the test plan, word for word. Another key trait of a good interviewer is active listening. Pay attention to verbal cues and repeat back what your participant just shared in your own words to confirm understanding. There's an interviewing technique called the means-end method, also known as laddering. It's used to uncover the underlying motivations and values behind people's choices by asking them to explain why a particular attribute or consequence is important to them. While this technique is commonly used in market research to understand consumer behavior at a deeper level, UX researchers can leverage it too. Remember taking lecture notes in school or university? The same principle applies to interviewing. Researchers should take detailed and accurate notes. If you have the luxury of a secondary person in the session, have them take notes. While it has traditionally been best practice for UX researchers to take their own notes while moderating, researchers are becoming more collaborative. As a result, researchers often delegate note-taking so they can focus solely on moderating. You just ran your last participant session, and now you're ready to analyze and synthesize the data. If you took good notes or had someone take them for you, this is the time to put all your findings together and look for patterns and themes. But how do you identify patterns and themes? Someone once taught me the 1-2-3 method. If a finding appears once, it's a blip. If it appears twice, it's a coincidence. If it appears 3 times or more, it's a trend. This method helps you recognize meaningful insights in your data. When synthesizing your findings, always revisit your original research questions to ensure your report remains focused and relevant. Another best practice is answering your own research questions. You've completed the analysis and synthesized the findings. Now it's time to directly answer those questions. One common mistake I often see is researchers assigning numerical values to qualitative insights. For example, writing 8 out of 10 users said this. In qualitative research, especially with smaller sample sizes, it's best practice to use terms like most, some, all, none, or half instead. That said, stakeholders sometimes request numbers, wanting percentages or exact counts of users who said something. A helpful approach is to duplicate the slide with the requested numbers, place it in the appendix, then include a link to the original slide, directing stakeholders to the appendix for further details. Now let's talk about one-off or two-off insights. This is why identifying patterns and themes is so important. Suppose 2 participants mention something similar, and it ties back to a research question, but no one else brings it up. In my reports, I like to include sections for main findings and additional findings. These one-off insights can go in the additional findings section. However, when presenting to a larger audience, I recommend focusing on the main findings. If you do include a one-off insight, add a note clarifying that it should be taken with a grain of salt due to the smaller sample size. One final thought on analysis, synthesis, and reporting. Every strong research presentation includes recommendations or impacts. Based on your observations and findings, you should provide actionable recommendations for the team. I typically collaborate with a designer or product manager to craft these recommendations. Why? Because they're the ones who understand what is feasible in the short term and long term. We have covered a lot about best practices in UX research, from creating a solid study plan to analysis, synthesis, and reporting. Now I want to take a moment to talk about communicating with stakeholders. One of the biggest lessons I've learned as a UX researcher is that while keeping an open line of communication is important, over-communicating can backfire. Early in my career, I constantly updated my team and stakeholders, but I found it to be exhausting and inefficient. Here's the approach I take now. Communicate as much as necessary, and if the team needs more, adjust gradually, not in one giant leap. Take it step by step. When I'm part of an organization or team that values UX research, I don't have to communicate as frequently because they already understand how to work with me and how research fits into the process. However, when I'm in an organization where UX research is undervalued or unfamiliar, I intentionally overcommunicate. I make sure my voice is heard, that research is evangelized, and that stakeholders understand its impact. Before we wrap up, I want to highlight one more best practice: avoiding bias and discrimination. As a UX researcher, you are the neutral party responsible for ensuring that your research is fair and inclusive. Bias can creep in, especially when researchers are deeply embedded in a team or product. Stay aware of this and actively work to remove bias from your research approach. I hope this episode was both helpful and educational. Whether you're a seasoned UX researcher or just starting out, it's crucial to always remember the foundations of UX research. We are the frontline warriors of user experience. Thank you for tuning into my podcast series, The UX Research Lab. I will be sharing valuable insights from industry experts in the future episodes. Be sure to join me for another episode of Lennial Writes. Until next time, stay curious.